Yes, Prabhu, there's some question.
There is a question from Simon Novitz from London, UK. And the question is, I decided a while ago now to become raw vegan. This has made my whole...
To become what?
Vegan.
Oh.
Fruit eater. Mm-hmm. This has made my whole eating process much more simple than when I was cooked vegetarian. What do the scriptures say about eating just raw fruits, raw vegetables and salads? I understand the importance of prasadam, but my question has more to do with the energy we receive from food. If the raw vegan fruits and salads give us more energy for life and thus we do a better service for Krishna, then is this worth the sacrifice of not eating all the milk-based tasty vegetarian preparations?
The only references that I know from a Vedic perspective, we're told tapasis, rishis who live in the forest, they're sometimes described as living off a diet of, you know, fruits, berries, forest creepers, such things. When Mahaprabhu would travel, his assistant would collect different types of shak, spinach, forest spinach. Someone with an experienced eye can recognize those things. But we see in the pages of the Charitamritam the types of prasadam that are being taken by Mahaprabhu and the devotees. And that we revere and worship, and we don't think of it with any mundane reference point. Its special quality is said to be acquired by coming in touch with Krishna. Srila Prabhupada used to use the statement, Krishnaized. Right? But from one point of view, you know, I mean, minimally in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Patram Pushpam Palam Toyam Yome Bhakta Prayachati. So some very simple things are described there. There's no objection to that, and if someone finds that this is, because people don't know how to properly cook, that this is more suitable, and they're able to maintain a high energy level for service, that's fine. But we should be careful not to demean the sort of preparations that are described in Chaitanya Charitamritam that are favorite to Mahaprabhu and his devotees. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur has written a song in glorification of the Mocha Ganta of Sachi Mata, the banana flower preparation. That told Madhavendra Puri stopped at their house. You know, later we hear when Mahaprabhu taking sannyas at the age of 24 and for 6 years with Puri as a base, traveling in South India. And at one point he meets Rangapuri, and by way of introduction, when Rangapuri understands this new sannyasi is from Navadvip, he's saying, oh, you know, I remember I was with Madhavendra Puri, I accompanied him to Navadvip, and we were at the house of one Sachi Misra, and she made this mocha ganta that was out of this world. You know. And here again, we think this is the cook Yashoda, you know, Brajendra Nandana Jye Sachi Suta Hoylo She Balaram Hoylo Nitai. If Krishna is descended as Sachi Suta, Balaram Nitai, Sachi Suta means Sachi as Yashoda. So it's the equivalent of saying, you know, we had prasadam at the house of Yashoda. So he is recalling that taste, and by this is not just he tasted something nice. It's saturated with prem, Krishna prem. So he's telling the young sannyasi, Krishna, oh, at the house of Sachi Misra, we had this wonderful mocha ganta, this banana flower type preparation. And then Mahaprabhu saying, that's my mom, you know. So, oh. So in that way, a very sweet connection is there, and Madhavendra Puri praised that. This is beyond saguna plain taste. We're talking about, in general, saguna means within the mundane qualified world. Tamagun, rajagun, sattvagun. Ignorance, passion, and goodness. So we're told that food, everything in this world is tainted by these modes, and things can be, analyzed in this way, and like when you make compartments, but not compartments, categories, categorized. So what he's referring to, we would say, is categorized being in the mode of goodness, sattvagun, but within the saguna world, our interest, that's fine, but our interest is in what is nirguna, coming in touch with the nirguna world. Jai Srila Bhakti Vimala Avadhut Maharaj Ki Jai. And on that note, Avadhut Maharaj comes by and enters the nirguna world. But really, that is, we will always come back to this point, because merely situating oneself in sattvagun, the mode of goodness, the sattvagun, is not transcendence. It is not any guarantee. We're told it's the most favorable position for spiritual culture. But so many people who are, we could say for argument, situated in sattvagun, not appreciating the superiority of Krishna conception. So one does not yield the other. Right? You hear Sukadeva Goswami was, well, we can call Brahmavadi, as distinguishing from Mayavadi, not a Mayavadi, Brahmavadi, Brahman realized. So, Brahmeti Paramatmeti Bhagavan, that aspect. And by way of introduction, when he's in the assembly of those sages who are giving advice to Parikshit Maharaj, they're on the banks of the Jamuna, and they're giving their advice to him. We hear 7 days he has to live. He wants to know what's the duty of one in life, specifically for one who's about to die. And they're giving all these different recommendations, some tapa, some dan, some, you know, yajna, the things that have helped them overcome the mundane situation. And to Parikshit Maharaj. And Parikshit Maharaj is saying, I have 7 days, and the things you're recommending, each one you could devote a lifetime to. So you need, like, I want a unanimous verdict from you all what I should do, how I should proceed. With all due deference to what you're recommending, lifetime could be devoted to each one, and my lifetime is down to 7 days. And it's at that point that Sukadeva Goswami arrives. And at Veda Vyasa, the description, Gurudev would sometimes recite this. There are a few slokas just on the beauty of Sukadeva Goswami. His beauty. And Gurudev showed me like one Sanskrit word there he liked very much. He took from there and used in one of his slokas glorifying Srila Guru Maharaj. But it's describing like his neck, his waist. It's a very beautiful description. He was extraordinary looking. And like Krishna in skin tone, if you want to say. And he's 16. And we're told, 16-year-old boy, they're all great old sages. We don't know. Some of them can be hundreds, thousands of years old. Right? Like we hear the yogis who are hundreds. They could be hundreds, thousands. But they see this 16-year-old boy, and he's naked. Digambara. That's the poetic Sanskrit saying. He's wearing the directions. As opposed to saying naked, he's saying digambara. He's dressed by, you know, north, south, east, and west. And the children, they just think he's puggle, he's crazy. Right? So, I mean, what are you going to think? You see some naked person walking down the street, that would probably be your first assessment. And that's Sukadev. As he is encountering that assembly, told those sages are experts in the art of physiognomy. I mean, they can, even by what to speak of your internal spiritual substance, they can see by your form. It's also detected in Nimai Pandit. I mean, when he's a baby, what do they call it? Nyagrodha Parimandala means the signs of an extraordinary super personality. So they're seeing in Sukadeva Goswami, they can see past the objective perspective. They're recognizing subjective substance. And another thing is, he's legendary. They've heard about him, that he was in the womb of his mother till the age of 16. He was already liberated in the womb of his mother. Then he came out into the world, fully developed. So he's a legendary personality, son of Veda Vyas. And they recognize in him this super personal traits. So although these are the leading sages of all the different schools of thought within the universe, not only the earth, from around the universe, they've assembled there, they elevate him to the presidential seat without hearing him say a word. They realize this is the person who should be in the presidential seat. And interestingly, in that audience, Veda Vyas and Narada, that means Guru and Param Guru. And Guru Maharaj said, with eagerness, they're thinking like, what, because Narada gave to Vyas is doing this thing, what we gave to him, it's going to come out with some new color, it's going to, be exciting to see the new color, quality, characteristic, expression, like that. They're not thinking, well, we're his guru and parama, you know, we should be. No, they're happy to see this. And that's Sukadev, after telling Pariksit Maharaj, because he says, the question you're asking, that's the question that should be asked. Not just for one who's about to die, but in life, this is the question that should inform all the decisions that we make. Like the Bhagavatam sloka elsewhere says, Tasmad gurum prapadyeta jigyasu shrey uttamam. When you come in connection with guru, what sort of question you ask? Jigyasu is to inquire. Shreya uttamam, what is ultimately beneficial for you, not what is immediately to our liking, but what is ultimately beneficial for me. Shreya uttama, the ultimate concern. And so Sukadev is telling Pariksit Maharaj, actually your question, this is the question everyone should pose, and the answer is critical to their life and how to use your life, your acquired energy, your intelligence, everything, right? How to prioritize life. Kamasya nendriya priti labhu jiveta yavata jivasya tattva jigyasa narto yasteha karma bi. Is also in the beginning of the Bhagavatam. And yes, saying the reason we're accumulating energy should be ultimately to make spiritual progress, not to have that energy become a burden or weigh us down with karmic result, karmic circumstance. So he's saying, this is the question. He's saying, otherwise, nrinam shanti sahasrasa. People have thousands of things they're talking about every day in every way. And he says some very terse things about what he considers a waste of time and a waste of life. Deha kalatra kalatra dishu atma sanyeshu sapavi griheshu griyamayam. I forget the other line, but the one I want to get to is he is introducing himself. Parinishtitopi nairgunye uttama shloka lilaya grihita cheta rajar se akyanam yadaditavan. Is parinishtitopi nairgunye, nirguna. Saying I'm legendary is known. I started off in the nirguna plane, not in the saguna world. That's why they're all deferring to him. We're giving advice on what was helpful to us, but he is never tinged. So he, from the nirguna plane, he's appeared here. So that's known, and this is critical to why Sukadev Goswami is, in Guru Maharaj's words, the loudspeaker of Srimad Bhagavatam, why it's coming through him, and why necessarily it must come through him. I mean, this is significant in Vedic culture in that time and why it will be accepted from such a personality. And he says, so I was situated in the Nirguna plane, but then he said, Uttama Shloka Lilaya, Grihita Cheta Raja Se Akyanam Yadaditvan. And then I heard Uttama Shloka means these beautiful descriptions of the Leela, the pastimes of Krishna. He said, and then it's as if I, my consciousness, myself, I was carried away to another plane that I didn't know existed previously. So that means, nirguna means above the saguna world, but in the general nirguna, then he went deep, dive deep into reality, he went deep into Krishna conception. And why this is significant is we're told when he was leaving home, and Vedavyas, you know, felt something. It's his son who's running after him, because Sukadeva is so detached. And we're told he goes by a pond where some Dibya Devis are bathing naked. And when Sukadeva goes by, they look at him, make eye contact. They don't even, they just continue with their bathing. They don't bother to cover themselves. But Vedavyasa, he's running, my son, my son. And it's very heart, pulls the heart in the Bhagavatam said, and only the trees echoed, my son, my son. And Sukadeva went off. And that's one of the reasons Vyasa composed the sloka to and trained some people who didn't even know what it was. Nivritashtar Shar Upagiyamanad Bhavoshidat Shotra Manorima Aviramat Kautama Sloka Gunanuvadat. They trained them. So when Sukadev heard, they're like, this, that's how Vedavyas got him back. These taught them how to sing this sloka, and he knew that would capture Sukadev. So Sukadev saying, this, it like just captured me, heart and soul, and carried me away to another world that I didn't know. When I was in the Nirguna plane, I didn't know there was this other world of Radha and Krishna and Braja Gopis, Nanda Yasoda, Subal, Sridham, Vrindavan, Gopa, Gopi, you know. And all of that. Kujat ko kilahangsa sarasa guna kirne mayura kule. Srinivasacharya is saying with the kokils and the peacocks and the swans and lotus flowers floating in the Jamuna. Normally, when Nimai Pandit was speaking with Keshava Kashmiri, after Keshava Kashmiri, you know, he thinks he's meeting with Nimai Pandit, who's like the grammar school teacher, not advanced education. You know, he's teaching the kids Sanskrit. And Nimai Pandit, you know, I'm trying to do the best I can. He said, and they're walking on the bank of the Ganga, and they're with Nimai Pandit, and he's saying, he's favorite, Keshava Kashmiri, to the goddess Saraswati, Bach, Devi, goddess of speech, song. And so Nimai Pandit said, perhaps you could compose some prayers in glorification of Mother Ganga? And he said, oh, yes, of course. And we're told he, in an hour's time, he composed 100 slokas in praise of the Ganga. This type of quality he has. 100 original slokas composed in an hour in praise of the Ganga. That alone tells you something about the quality of these personalities. And everyone is so impressed, and Nimai Pandit said, that was amazing. You know. He said, and if you would, if we would take one of these slokas and you would describe the literary faults of that and also its good qualities, that would be wonderful. And he said, what do you mean the faults? He said, well, when we analyze these things, I mean, I'm not really qualified to do that, but it would be appropriate to consider the faults that may be there and also the alankar and all the clever, wonderful things that are. But what do you mean by faults? He said, well, like this one, for example. And he quotes one of the slokas. And Keshava Kashmiri is thinking, like, how can he remember, like, you know, number 47 out of 100? And Mahaprabhu starts quoting that and saying, and here we see that, although I'm not really qualified to analyze this, but we see the following faults are there. One being which he says a line about Bhavani. He's saying, the husband of the wife of Shiva. So he's saying, this is a fault because the way you're expressing that, it appears that Shiva's wife has another husband. So you say, to the husband of the wife of Shiva. If you said the, you know, Bhavani's husband, we think Shiva. But if you say the husband of the wife of Shiva, makes us think that Shiva has another husband, and that's a fault. And then the reason I'm mentioning this was this regard, that says, but on the beautiful side, think normally the lotus is situated, lotus comes from the water. So, but what you've shown very nicely here is that the Ganga comes from the lotus feet of the Lord. So that's a very beautiful thing. Right? So that's what I, so all of those things, saying, I didn't know that world existed where the water comes from the lotus, the Ganga comes from the lotus feet of the Lord, and the stream, the current that's coming from that abode, and all those pastimes. And it was the Uttama Sloka, these, as Guru Maharaj said, they're only posing passively, actually they're spiritually conscious substance revealing themselves in this world. So that's Sukadev. When before this certification is being given, that when he goes by the bathing Dibya Devis, they don't bother to cover themselves. But when Vedavyas comes searching for his son, they're covering themselves. And he's inquiring why he notices this. And they say, well, him, we, when we make eye contact, we see there is not even a trace amount of exploiting tendency in his gaze. There's no male gaze. It's beyond this world, that gaze in his eye. And the implication, and Vedavyas, and me? They're saying, not to mind it, but. So that we think, oh, this is an interesting anecdote or some trivial event that's like a footnote to whatever important thing is. No, why is that given? Because that's Sukadev who doesn't have the male gaze, a trace amount of exploiting tendency in his glance. He's going to be the loudspeaker for the Madhura Rasa pastimes of Krishna, Radharani, and Brajagopis. So he's already been certified that he has no interest, not even remotely, in the male-female relationship. Mundane eroticism is of no interest to him, and never has been. So if that person who's like that is captured heart and soul by the sweet pastimes of Radha and Krishna and Brajagopis, it's a way of certifying that they don't have a trace amount of exploiting or mundane eroticism. But they're pure. It's another world, another plane. And that's the heart of the matter of the Bhagavatam, is to reveal this, rather than saying that, you know, mukti or liberation means, you know, modern people think it just means to be free. Just generic freedom is good. Right? But Guru Maharaj is qualifying and saying, well, what is your concept of freedom? Freedom for the senses, like free to do anything and everything, or freedom from the senses? Freedom from the senses, that's the Eastern concept, we can say, in the most general sense. Freedom for the senses, that's Western, you know, multicultural, pluralistic, expialidocious. Right? That's the Western one. Freedom for the senses. Freedom in and of itself is good, just to be free. Right? Whereas in the Eastern world, they said, no, actually, unrestricted senses, that is being a slave of your senses. That is not freedom, to be the slave of the senses. Rather, mukti should mean freedom from the senses, right? Sense control. Not that those things which are lower than you are controlling you. Right? What is the Gita sloka? Indriyani paranyahur indriyevya param manaha. Manasastu para buddhe, yo buddhe paratastu sa. The objects of the senses, being that they're objects of the senses, are one strata below the senses. The senses are superior to that and more refined. But those senses, higher than that, is mind, the seed of sense experience. Well, and at least in English, one of the synonyms for being crazy is he's lost his senses. Right? Does that work in Russian? Some similar thing? So. But senseless, lost your senses. That means the mind is. We can say absent-minded, if we want to be polite. Someone's calling your name and you're not responding. Right? If we filmed it, we could prove that literally they were vibrating your name, and if we had, you know, some scientific instruments hooked up, you could see the cochlea and the ear, you know, doing all kinds of things. And even if we had a really good scientific instrument, it could show your brain and your mind and all these things. And you're not hearing. That's interesting. You mean, so that implies that hearing really is a subtle thing. There's a hearer inside who may hear or not hear, even if literally all the mechanics of sound and hearing have taken place. If there's someone not to hear, right, that experience is canceled. So actually what Krishna is doing in this sloka is he's taking us from the gross objective world and the subtle subjective plane. So he's saying superior to the senses are the mind, the seat of sense experience. And then finer than that, manasastu parabuddhe, buddhi, intelligence, the discriminating factor. And then he's saying, and the soul, he's finer than that, the plane of Atma. So, Sukadev Goswami, he's certifying that these pastimes, which is what the Bhagavatam will culminate in. That's why it's being introduced in the beginning. 12 cantos, 10 cantos of, or 9 cantos, like prerequisite to enter the 10th canto. I used to think, when first coming in connection with the Krishna conscious movement, like, because Prabhupada, he made the Krishna book, and we find, oh, it's the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam. And very mercifully he did that, because he was thinking, maybe he won't finish the other 9 cantos. But it made one think. When the Bhagavatam is presented as the body of the Krishna, of Krishna, first and second canto, the lotus feet, third, fourth, moving up, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth, 10th canto, we're told, is the face, the lotus face of Krishna. And the Panchadhyay, those 5 chapters dealing with the Rasalila, like the smile on the face of Krishna. So this is, the Bhagavatam culminates in this, the 10th canto, and particularly these 5 chapters. Why nine cantos before that? And we're being told earlier, muktir hitmanyata rupam swarupena vibhastiti. Real mukti is not merely sense control, but sense expression in that upper world. Because otherwise we live like, who wants to do that? Unless we say, well, if you control your senses, there's some long, long-term gratification ahead for you. What do they call it? Short-term gratification, long-term gratification, right? So you can look forward to something like that. That's one way of inducing, but really the Bhagavatam's telling us that, and why Narada was chastising Vyas. He's saying, you're telling diseased people how to get cured of their disease, and that's good, but you're not telling them what a healthy life is. So you're saying, when the soul is diseased, here are ways of curing that disease. But you're not telling them what a healthy life is. That means that there's prospect for all the full spectral range of sensual activities in the spiritual world. And Prabhupada mentions this in the beginning of the Bhagavatam in the first verse, with regard to janmadyasi yataha, and adi rasa is indicated by Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur. And Prabhupada said, because people are not properly educated about erotic potential in the spiritual world, they conclude the only world where that can be expressed is here. So that's not going to work out too well in the long run. And he's saying, the only possible plane for this to be expressed, eros, is in the mundane world. And what's the spiritual world? You know, it's monotonous. It's monotony. Right? But it's relief from suffering and then monotony. Right? Narada is telling Vyasa, you have to now reveal to the people what is their potential in their swarup, in their original form in the spiritual world. What sort of possibility is there? So nine cantos of backstory, of prerequisite, conversations that sages have. Second canto, Sukadev talking about different types of atmagyan, spiritual knowledge, even yoga, meditation, paramatma, moving in this direction. Third canto, Kapila Dev, his instructions to Devahuti, which Rupa Goswami quotes in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu by saying, the pure devotees, they're not interested in other types of liberation, so-called mukti. Salokya samipya sarshti sarupya, and what is sayuja, never. Kaivalyam narakayate naratam. Merging, hellish idea to devotees. But pure devotees, Kapila telling Devahuti, Salokya, to live in the same planet of the Lord, not interested in that. Sarupya, to have a form similar to the Lord, not interested in that. Sarshti, to have the same opulences. Samipya, to be equal, none of these things. So he's really telling what is pure devotion. And he's saying, what is one of the slogans? He's saying, as the rivers naturally flow to the sea, the heart will express itself and flow in this direction. Satam prasangam mama vyorya sangvido bhavanti hritkarna rasayana kata tadjoshana asvavavarka vartmani sradha ratir bhaktir anukramishyati. And where's the strongest position? Satam prasangam. It's like sankirtan. Means in the association of those who are superior, This is very powerful. Mama Virya Sangriha, it's very potent. That's where the real potency is, and the superior devotees to get their service, their association. Anyway, fourth canto, Kumaras are there. Tasyaravinda Nayanashipadaravinda, Kinjal Kamisra Tulasi Makarandavayu. How the fragrance of the lotus feet of the Lord mixed with tulsi and saffron and other things enters their nostrils, and they undergo a transformation through aromatherapy. In the fifth canto, Rishabhdev. Nayam deho deha bhajam niloke. Kastan karman arhate vid bhujamye. Tapo dibyam putraka yena sattvam shudhye yasmad brahma sokyam tvanantam. Tapo dibyam. If you'll engage in some austerities, you'll achieve the transcendental. Tapo dibyam putraka yena sattvam shudhye yasmad brahma sokyam tvanantam. Brahma sukh, spiritual happiness, unlimited spiritual happiness you'll experience. But again, what does Rupa Goswami say in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu? The book on devotion. He talks about Brahmananda, spiritual realization of Brahman. He said, Brahmananda bhavedesha, chet baradha, gunikrita, naiti bhakti sukhambodhe, paramanutalamapi. And if you take we should preface this by saying, the great, talking about freedom for the senses, freedom from the senses. Ramante yogino anante sachirananda chiratmani. The yogis, free from that mundane sense pleasure. And the tapashis and the great spiritually realized souls, they are experiencing Brahman realization. The thrill of generic spiritual realization. And how great is it, we're told? It's so ecstatic that the highest material pleasure, generally represented as eroticism, is repulsive to them. As Jamuna Charja said, Yadavadi Mama Cheta Krishna Padaravinde Nava Nava Rasada. Since I'm realizing that newer and newer tastes, if I recall some of my past life, he's saying, ugh, you know, it's repulsive to me. So they're experiencing something that is so internally pleasing relishable, that the highest material pleasure is of no interest to them. But that's Brahmananda. Rupa Goswami says, so if you take that, you know, hold that thought, so that Brahmananda, multiply it a trillionfold, and it's not equivalent to a drop of the taste of Krishna Bhakti Rasa. Now, if someone says, like, is that true? That should, you know, pique one's imagination. If someone has the audacity to tell you, this highest, generally considered highest spiritual Brahmananda, multiply that a trillion times, not equivalent to an atomic particle of this other substance, that's quite an advertisement. Then one should at least think, let me investigate and see. So, fifth canto, sixth canto, Ajamiel, Vaikuntha Namagrahanam, and also the Chitraketu pastime. Again, taking us in the direction of pure devotion. And Narayana Paraksarve Nakutaschana Bibhyati Swargapavarg Narakeshu Tulyarta Darshina. When Chitraketu is flying in his heavenly airplane, it comes upon him suddenly. There's Shiva. He's instructing some sages, giving them spiritual education, but Parvati is on his lap while he's giving them spiritual instructions. And he's thinking, this is not right. What audacity. And he is questioning Mahadev Shiva, who we should note, you know, is the master of Maya. He's not under the influence of Maya. He's the lord of Maya. And this is no way affects his position, but Parvati, she cannot tolerate this insult. So he's in his heaven, she curses him, you go to hell immediately. And what is Chitraketu's response? Yes, madam. Immediately he's ready to go to hell. And Shiva says, Narayana Paraksarve Nakutaschana Bibhyati Swarga Pavarg Narakeshu Tulyarta Darshina. Darshina. Just see the quality of the Lord's divine. They don't care if they're in heaven or in hell. They just want to serve. It's not interested in any being elevated in the material world, or if he's put in a hellish condition. We're told when Saraswati Thakur made his proposal to come out of Mayapur and go to Calcutta to begin the missionary preaching of Gaudiya Math, Gaurakishordas Babaji Maharaj, who is his guru, he's saying, Prabhu, Calcutta's Maya. Don't go to Calcutta. Stay in the Dham where it's safe. You know, Calcutta's like the center of hell and hellish mentality. And don't go there. But this is one of their divine pastimes. And Saraswati Thakur says, oh, you don't know. I have so much faith in the purifying power of the dust of your holy lotus feet, Mahada Adbhuta Pavana Shakti Padam, that with the purifying power of the dust of your lotus feet, I can liberate thousands of Calcuttas. That's the devotee. And what did he say? And if Calcutta is hell or the center of hell, he's saying, then what better place? Have Shingasan and, you know, Gauranga and Radha Govinda to establish the worship of Mahaprabhu and Radha and Krishna. That'll be my target. So it shows it's consistent thematically with Bhagavad Gita. Shiva saying, oh, see how exalted the devotees are. And the seventh canto, then, it's leading up to Prahlad Maharaj and Shuddha Bhakti, na sabritya sabai vanik. No jnana karma janavritam, no ulterior motive in the devotion of Prahlad Maharaj. Only he wants to serve Nisringadev out of love and affection, not to get something from him in exchange for that. So that's Shuddha Bhakti. So we can say once it's up to the seventh canto, and then eighth canto, we hear of Gajendra. That sloka of Rupa Goswami is applicable to Pratap, Rudra Maharaj, and Gajendra. Sarupam Bibhrano Jagatatulim Adaita Daita Prapano Srivasa Janita Paramananda Gorima Harir Dino Dari Gajapati Kripo Tsekatarala. Rupa Goswami has written the story. Every line has two meanings. Sarupam Bibhram, saying there's nothing, no one compares to Srup Damodar. Nothing compares to the Sarup of Mahaprabhu. It's the beauty, Swarupa Bibhram, Jagatatulyam, and the world. Advaita, Dvaita, everything can go. So here, Gajapati means how he kripa, he mercifully liberated Prataparudra Maharaj, but also Gajendra, the elephant, in that pastime. And there, the significant pastime, churning of the milk ocean. Now we can understand from Guru Maharaj why it must be there and located there. Because Guru Maharaj explained, although ostensibly the devas and the asuras, they're churning the Mandara hill on the back of the Kurma avatar with the divine celestial servant, Vasuki, to relieve relieving the itching on Kurmadev and churning the milk ocean and producing Lakshmi Devi, Airavata, Indra's elephant, Chandraloka, the moon. Krishna descends in the Chandravangsha. Lakshmi, that means Sri Mahalakshmi, Lakshmi Sahasrasata Sambrahma Sevyamanam. I mean, that the Chandravangsha and the Lakshmis, Airavata will later, when Surabhi bathes Krishna after the Indramohan pastime in Govardhan, then Airavata, the elephant, with Ganga water, washes also Abhishek of Govinda. At that time, Indra gives Krishna a name. Gava, Indra, the Indra of the Gava, of the cows, Govinda. And so Guru Maharaj said, so ostensibly they're searching for Amrita, right? To become deathless, immortal. He's saying, but what really is Amrita? What is really the nectarine substance? What was told in the beginning of the Bhagavatam? It's consistent throughout. The Bhagavatam cannot be presenting a conventional, stereotypical conception of immortality. It already mentioned in the very beginning of the book that Kaitava Dharma is tossed from the pages of the Bhagavatam. No such thing will be promoted there. Lesser conceptions of mukti, praujita, dharma projita kaita bhotra paramo nirmat saranam satam. Mahaprabhu in his explanation to Prakasananda Saraswati and the others saying why praujita from Sridhar Swami is saying that mukti absent swaropena vivastiti, the possibility of serving Krishna, is the ultimate cheating, the worst type of cheating. So anyway, so Guru Maharaj said, what really is the ultimate nectarine substance? It's what's being presented in the Bhagavatam in the 10th canto, which is Madhura Rasa. That's the Amrita that they're ultimately searching for. Otherwise, this pastime in the Bhagavatam, it would be taking you in another direction. It has to be all going in this direction. It wants to take you in that direction of Madhura Rasa. And ninth canto is Ambarish Maharaj, and then the dynasties preceding the advent of Krishna. But so I used to think, like, in the beginning, why, if the 10th canto is so special, why is it the 10th canto, you know, and not like the first or the second one? Because I didn't understand the necessity of the gradual revelation of Krishna conception, so that when you get to the birth of Krishna, you understand who he is, as later given in that Panchadaya section where it says, Vikriditam Brajabhidu Viritam Cha Vishnu. Wait a minute. It's all talking about Krishna. Why insert the word Vishnu here? Seems out of place. No, the reason it's there is to remind you, these are the pastimes of divinity, of God. Here, Vishnu is a placeholder for divinity, for God, not for Vishnu himself, but Krishna. But if we just put Krishna, then maybe you're thinking, avajananti mam mudha manushim tanam sritam param bhavam ajananto mamabhut. They're not understanding his actual position. So the word Vishnu is used there. And 11th canto Uddhava Gita, and Navayogendra's and Mahaprabhu's appearance mentioned. Bande Mahaprabhushate Charanaravindam. That time is coming, the sannyas of Mahaprabhu. Tyaktva Sudushtaja Surepshita Raja Lakshmin. We can't understand the love of Lakshmi Priya, Vishnu Priya for Nimai Pandit. So it says the imperial throne of the premic heart of Vishnu Priya, Tyaktva Sudushtaja Surepshita Raja Lakshmin, that he's withdrawing from to liberate the fallen souls. If we want to understand something about it, his first wife, Lakshmi Priya, just by his going to East Bengal, Bangladesh, this brief period of separation, what do we hear from Mahaprabhu and Radharani? They're saying, if I had any love for Krishna, I would have died. Right? There it says, why did Lakshmi Priya leave the world? It says, Viraha Sarp. The serpent of separation bit her. She died from separation. That's why she left the world. Just a brief period of separation from Nimai Pandit. He went to Bangladesh for some time. During that period, she couldn't tolerate being separated from him. So it's an indirect way of telling us the degree of prema in her heart. And it has some other significance with Vaikuntha connection. And then Vishnu Priya later. But so that time is approaching. So what Sukadev is presenting, what's in the Bhagavatam, what is Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur saying? He gives a nutshell synopsis of who is Mahaprabhu, as only he can, we can say. And you say, Aradhya Bhagavan Vrajesha Tvanayas Tad Dhamma Vrindavanam Ramya Kachid Vrajabhadu Bhargena Chakalpitai. Saying, there is no superior method of aradhya, like aradhana, aradhita, radharani. There's no superior method of worshiping the Lord. Brajesha tanai. Braja, how is Krishna always like that? Brajesh means who? Who's the king of Vrindavan? Not Krishna, Nanda Maharaj. He's Brajesha Tanoi. He's the son of the king of Vrindavan. And Mahaprabhu said, Sachi Suta, Sachi Nandan, Sachi Shuno. Always he's identified with the devotees. So Chakrabarti Thakur is saying, there's no superior method of worship then, and Guru Maharaj used this word for Kalpita, then that invented by the Brajagopis. Like, they invented this way. It's Kalpita can also mean imagined by them. But not like imagination as we might normally think. It means from their hearts, they've invented, imagine this way of worshiping Krishna, the son of the king of Braja in his divine abode, Vrindavan. Then Srimad Bhagavatam Pramanam Amalam. And Srimad Bhagavatam tells us this. Everything we need to know about this, it's in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Pramanam Amalam. It's the Amala. It's 100% pure. It's perfect. It's the ultimate evidence. That what, how we say, well, you mean that these Braja Gopi girls in Vrindavan, they invented this way of worshiping Krishna, and that's, there's nothing higher than this? We just have to accept it. No, Srimad Bhagavatam is saying that. Don't just take my word for it. The Bhagavatam, the Bhagavat Purana is telling you that. This is its message. It's telling you the way these Braja Gopi girls worship Krishna, that's the ultimate reality, the ultimate way of worshiping the ultimate reality. There's nothing higher than this. Srimad Bhagavatam Pramanam Amalam. And what is it? Prema Pumarto Mahan. Dharma Artha Kama Moksha. That's four. What's the fifth? Beyond that, Prem. Prem Pumarto Mahan. That's what is, this is all leading toward. And then he said, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu Matamidam Tatrapi Napara. In, you know, four lines, he's telling everything we need. And there's what does it say in that slok at the end, that Dharma Prochita Kaitabhutra Paramo Nirmatsarana? Vedyam Vastamam Vastu Shivadam Tapatrayon Mulanam. Srimad Bhagavate, the Bhagavatam, Mahamuni Krite, written by Vyasadeva, Kimba Parair Ishara. What more do you need than this? This is the his you know, magnum opus, his masterwork is the Bhagavatam. It's Krishna in book form. And what did Guru Maharaj write about that? Yadamiyam mahima sri bhagavatam katayam pratipadam anubhutam apyaladabideya tad akila rasamurti shamalila avalambam madura rasadi sri radha parapadmam prapadye. This the Prabhupada called it the Krishna book, the 10th canto. So the Bhagavatam is the book of Krishna. But this book of Krishna, Gauranga is saying, although ostensibly her name is, it is not mentioned there, you don't find the name Radhika, Radharani, Sri Radha, not mentioned. It says Aradita, Anaya, Radhita, Nunam, like that. The one who worshiped Krishna the best. And we're told, why? Sometimes we're told, Sukadeva's thinking, sees the sages and thinking, this is too intimate, too confidential to be so explicit, to be that explicit about. So he's suppressing that. The Brihad Bhagavatamritam Tika of Sanatan Goswami Prabhu, he says that. But otherwise, Sukadeva, he has so much love and affection for Radharani and Brajagopis. If he vibrates their names, saying, it will ignite such a fire of separation in his heart, he'll be incapacitated. He won't be able to do his seva of presenting the Bhagavatam. So he's, this is Mahaprabhu during the daytime interacting with the devotees, he's controlling his ecstatic emotional interior. At night, it is unchecked. In the Gangbira and otherwise. But during the day, he's trying. Last 12 years of his life, totally unchecked, 24-7, behind closed in the Gangbira with Swoop Damodar and Ramananda. But so Guru is saying, although her name is not mentioned, actually every pratipada means that every step is meant to take us in the direction of the service of her holy lotus feet. of which that Kheersaga, or what, that Amrita, Madhura Rasa is that substance, Sri Radha Padapadmam Prabhade. He says, Shama Leela Avalambam. Those pastimes are wholly, solely dependent upon her. So even that, the search for that nectarine substance will necessarily take one to the service of the holy lotus feet of Srimati Radharani. Hare Krishna.